Hello, and welcome to Art Table's podcast series, Artist Perspectives. I'm Jessica Porter, Art Table's Executive Director, and I'm looking forward to sharing this series with you. Since 1980, Art Table is the leading professional organization devoted to supporting women in the visual arts. Art Table's Artist Perspectives podcast puts Art Table members in conversation with women artists at the forefront of their practice. Through these conversations, Art Table aims to share insights, strategies, and practical advice in public dialogue, specifically through intimate conversations with artists.
Kristen Nicola is an art dealer, curator, and Art Table member. In fact, Kristen met her longtime business partner, Kat Griffin, at an Art Table salon dinner. Together, the two run Akola Griffin, which represents artists like Nancy Cohen, who you're about to hear, and other modern and contemporary artists with a primary focus on important American and Native American women. Nancy Cohen is an artist whose work has been widely exhibited throughout the United States and is represented in important collections such as the Montclair Museum, the Newark Public Library, the Wetherspoon Art Gallery, and the Zimmerle Museum. 2019 marks the 20th anniversary of artist Nancy Cohen and Kristen Nicola's intertwining careers and friendship. Here, Kristen and Nancy discuss the challenges they've encountered, creating site-specific work for collectors and institutions, the shift of Akola Griffin from gallery to private dealer, and everything in between.
Nancy, one of my favorite memories of our now very long-term relationship in the art world is when I first met you. Do you remember that?
I remember you coming to my studio when I was on 111 First Street, and it was an open studio, I think,
day. It was a Jersey City open studio, and I had been told by a close friend who is an artist that I should look at your work. I had become the director of exhibitions at the Hunterdon Art Museum, and they wanted me to not only get artists from New York, but artists who had studios in New Jersey. That was so exciting for me when I first saw your work. She was so right about how unusual and compelling your work was. And I know we talked about it before. The thing that attracted me so much was how you use materials that, you know, that nobody, at that time, I had not seen anyone using materials the way you were, putting these glass lamp bases together. But then you told me that they were glass globes.
Yeah, they weren't the bases on the lamps. They were old-fashioned, like the glass parts. They were the glass tops of lamps, not the bases of the lamps.
Okay. And you had welded them together?
Well,
somehow.
I had them in structures. I hadn't welded the lamps, but I'd always been interested in glass, and I was really interested in those old decorative forms, and they were a whole series of suspended connected with other materials with handmade paper and wire, and were suspended like almost like a constellation throughout the studio. The exhibition was around 98. Was around 98. I don't actually really remember that first studio visit, but I do remember when you got in touch and invited me to have the show. And right. I remember the whole process of putting the show together and installing it and how exciting that was. And
because we used the biggest space in the museum, the whole second floor. And you told me that was like the first time you showed your paper pieces?
It was the first time I had shown works on paper in their own show. So the sculpture was in the really big space. Yeah. And then there was a series of paper pieces in the small gallery off of the main gallery. That was the first time that anyone had ever focused at all on my paper pieces. I'd had maybe one or two in a show, but they had never been
in a room space.
By themselves. Yeah. And I think that was probably the biggest show I'd had to date.
Uh-huh.
And the space was so beautiful.
Yeah.
And
it's an unusual space.
Yeah. And it was really exciting to install, and you had this, you know, enormous you were kind of a on a shoestring budget, but with an enormous crew of unbelievably dedicated volunteers, like from picking up the work to kind of doing anything they needed to make the work
To install
that work in, yeah, with those thick plaster walls and that really dark old hardwood floor. And
yeah, the old mill was nearly impenetrable when it came to installation. But I did train them, and they became a crack crew. I swear they could have worked at MoMA.
Yeah, they were great. And I remember there were the two really large floor pieces that kind of meandered down on the floor.
Yeah.
And one of the pieces had just pretty much blended right into the color of the floor. And, you know, I remember being sort of in a panic because you practically couldn't see the piece. And then somehow you got one of your Wally to go out and go home and get a palm sander. And then he sort of slightly sanded off the finish on the floor so that you couldn't really tell it was sanded off, but you could see the piece again. So it was just kind of amazing the lengths they went to make the work look good there. Yeah, I think that you so obviously got my work in a way right from the start. Like I felt like you understood what I was trying to do and could see it in a way that was really important to me, and understood how to put it together in a way that helped other people see it. So that's why, and because of your generosity over time, I've called on you from time to time to help me out when I've had other opportunities to see if you could kind of put your eye into the work and, you know, help figure out which work to show and how to install it. So I feel like we've had a really long collaborative relationship.
That's true.
Even when we weren't working together officially, we were in conversation in a way that...
About your other shows. Yeah, absolutely. You never stop developing, like not even for a year. And that, I think, I find so unusual about you is that just when I think you've done the most beautiful work you could possibly do, I come to your studio and there's a whole new body of work that is completely, I mean, definitely connected and definitely evolved from, but a whole new vision. And it's just, and to this day, that's true. How do you do that?
I think I get excited by materials, and as the ideas kind of change and evolve, I'm always looking for different ways to get at what I'm trying to do or say. So it's pretty natural and intuitive. But also when I have the opportunity to learn something new, that's kind of one of the most exciting things for me. Like, kind of a new challenge, either in materials or a new space to work in, a new collaboration to have. So those things really excite me. And then kind of that gets me going.
Right.
But I also feel like having now... you know, been a working artist for quite a long time.
Right.
I see how things cycle back, you know, in terms of ideas. And I didn't remember that the first work of mine that you saw were those pieces that used those glass lamp pieces, because I didn't use glass much then. And now it's one of the main materials I work in. So it's kind of interesting to me that, you know, made an impression on you then. So I think that I have interests that carry on, and then depending on what I'm doing or what I'm exposed to, you know, it evolves that way.
Mm.
And I think also over time I kind of have more, you would hope, but have more control over the materials I use, so can get them to do more things, which excites me.
Right. A lot of your pieces are so complexly put together, especially the glass pieces. They always look a little scary,
Well, I've always been interested right from the beginning on making pieces that are like sort of right on the edge, where you feel like, oh no, maybe this could fall over or blow over, but doesn't. So that kind of precariousness in terms of materials and in terms of ideas and in terms of structure is kind of why sculpture has been interesting to me.
Well, it's sort of central to... It feels like it's central to what you're trying to express.
Yeah.
You know, the fragility and that delicate balance between stability and instability.
And yeah, my mom has been sort of amazing from the start. You know, she was always a kind of knitter and quilter, and she painted too. And then I can't remember.
Did she really love being a part of your pieces?
Yeah, the first time she really helped me was I had just had Anshul, my son, and I thought, okay, this goes back to the kind of always working. I thought, okay, I'll take 6 months off because, you know, how can you make art with a baby?
Right, yeah.
And he was about 2 weeks old, and I was sitting in my apartment, and my parents were there, and the phone rang, and it was the director of Socrates saying, you know, we're doing this big show, and would you like to be a part of the show? And I said, I just had a baby. Can I call you back? And I hung up the phone.
I think I was Nobody says that to Socrates Sculpture Park.
I was just really startled, I think. Like, I had kind of put the art out of my head, and then my parents are there, and I'm like, what should I do? And my mom's like, I'll help you. You know, so I called her back, and I'm like, okay, I can do it. And then for, like, the next few months, she would come out to Jersey City. I would bring my son to the studio and my mother to the studio, and then when he was, you know, awake, I would, like, feed him, and then she would play with him. And he was a baby, so he'd go back to sleep. So she would play with him when he was awake and then help me, you know, in, make the, you know, like, be my studio assistant when he was asleep, and even came to Socrates to install the same deal. I don't remember anything about the show. You know, it was, like, so in whatever zone. I, like, don't remember the other artists in the show.
I guess you're in the zone of making your piece and getting
and taking
there.
Care of the baby.
So when I left the museum and I started a gallery with, you know, my business partner, we, you know, we
– So you're talking about with Kat. With Kat.
Yeah, with Kat, you know, and having met at an art table networking dinner, that was so just fortuitous. I mean, it was – anyway, we were clearly meant to be business partners.
Kat was AIR
Gallery. She was the director, and she – I guess they were doing it, and we thought, well, okay, if they do it, then I can do a section for us.
Yeah, I remember you called me because I had made this piece called Combinatorics that was at Kane University, and it was about 12 feet square, something like that, an installation of a lot of components that I had made in the studio.
And I had, to be honest, when I saw that, I flipped out. I totally flipped out. I said, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. And so, can you do it, please?
Yeah, so you called first, and you said, I'm going to apply to do a an installation, you know, on a wall of the art fair, not in the booth. And let's do that. And can you maybe make it a little bit bigger? I'm like, okay. And then you called me back like a week later and said, well, they accepted your proposal, only the wall is 60 feet long. And it was like 6 weeks later. I'm like, okay. So then it was just like, but it was exciting. You know,
did you even have time to eat?
It was a major project and really fun.
I've always felt a little guilty that I didn't quite understand how much we were asking.
Well, yeah, but it was great because I never made a piece that long on the wall and I'd never scaled anything. You know, so it caused the piece to change in a ton of ways because it went from kind of a thing that you see. Well, it's a thing you saw in one way and then a piece you saw as you were moving across a space, which, you know, walking down, you know, it was a very different experience, the sense of like looking straight on and then the sense of moving through a place. And I introduced new materials and the piece changed a whole bunch of ways. And it also made me figure out, because we only had a day or a day and a half to install it, I had to figure out how to get other people to understand how to put it up from maps and photos because there was no way I could do that myself. So it kind of pushed me into a scale I'd worked in before, but never in that way. And then working
with so many detailed pieces
and so many people that needed to put it together. So that, like, professionally pushed me in a way that was exciting and, you know, was a.
That's why we're friends.
Yeah.
And that's from having worked with you for so long. I think
we talked about this when we were talking before, but I think it's, I think the fact that you come to this as having studied art rather than having, studied art history kind of makes a difference in the way that you've understood my work and also been able to talk to me about it. I think so. I think that's worth mentioning in this conversation that I think that,
yeah.
I mean, I think your combination with Kat, who comes from the art history end and the feminist end, and then you're coming from the artist end, brings something really unusual together. But I think in being able to talk to me about my work, you're being an artist, having studied art first, made a huge difference.
I've grown to understand over the years that curators who made art for at least a number of years before curating, that I think we do see things differently. I think having made art gives you a very different relationship to what you look at.
And I had no idea. I knew you for years before I knew that.
I know. I didn't talk about it much.
Yeah, I had absolutely no idea. I mean, I can't even remember when I knew, but then when you said, oh, and I still draw, I'm like, you draw?
I was in art school in the early 70s, early to mid 70s. And that's, that world doesn't exist anymore. I've spoken to enough studio artists now to realize that the whole perception of quote unquote, what is art has changed so much. And it's far more market driven now. And that's a whole huge topic.
Yeah. When I was in graduate school, there was never even I went to graduate school later, but early, in early 80s. And there was never a conversation about the art market
or postmodernist theory, because that's,
well, we had conversations about that because it was in the 80s when I was in school.
Oh, okay. So that's
idea that there was never a conversation about how you were going to survive as an artist, financially, what you were going to do to support yourself, what the art market was like, how you built a kind of career. None of that. It was just about making the work, which was kind of great when you were in school, and then kind of horrifying the day it was over that there had never been a single conversation about that.
And there you are out in the world and having left the museum world, which is kind of heaven, because I, got to show what I believed in, what I felt was important, come up with my own idea, thematic concepts for these things, and then to find the artists that worked with it. I mean, it was such a dream job that I really, as you know, because we're friends, I'm always ranting and raving about the art market. So as a dealer.
But I remember that you were very excited to become a dealer, like to kind of, I think having watched the art, watched that end of the art world because of other, because you had plenty of familiarity.
I had started in a gallery before I went to the museum.
Right. That I think you were so excited about kind of getting to do that too, to have it, to have it just be your vision and not the institution, right? So I remember your excitement. And I remember being excited to, because I had shown with, lots of other galleries, I was excited to kind of have that part of, to get to have you be my dealer, instead of my friend or whatever, So that was an exciting change for me. But I remember your enthusiasm when you made that shift.
It was the most exciting thing, to be honest, that I've ever done, was just having our own gallery was, it's true, pure heaven. I just wish it was a decent business model for our current economic times.
So do you want to say something about like your transition, what you were thinking, how you changed from curator to art dealer to having a – so you were a private dealer and then you had the gallery – right? I mean, you had that space in the 30s on the East Side before you were Cat's partner.
Yes,
you were partner, you're still partners, but then you had the gallery, Cola Griffin, and now you're kind of doing private dealing with some curating, and now you have a new thing you guys are going to try, so you want to talk about?
Yeah, that's it's the art world is this place of shifting sands. It feels like every year or two, everything shifts, and we went rather quickly from sales at galleries, as you know, to everything being at the art fairs, pretty much. And, the hard part for me, especially with our relationship, is that when we went into a private dealing, which has a lot of advantages, it just was and had to rely on the fairs, where mostly you have to show a number of artists. It was deeply hard for me that we couldn't show your work the way it needs to be shown. And the thing about art fairs is some artists' work really works. It somehow catches the attention, and other artists whose work needs more of an environment, which I think your work is so based on relationships to each other and to the environment, that it's harder. And that's been painful for me, I think, as a dealer, is, which is why, I think we're excited about starting an appointment only space, but at least a space where we can have an exhibition up that is something we feel is worth you know.
Right. I mean, for artists, obviously you want to sell your work if you can, but really artists want to make the work and they want people to see it. And so it's like the art fair model is not, at least for the artists I know, it's exciting to be included in one because a million people are coming, but you know that that's not really how people understand your work. They have to see more of it or see it. Not so fast, right?
Exactly. If they haven't seen a whole exhibition of an artist's work, seeing one or two pieces isn't always enough of a trigger. Right. I've always been curious about, and it's funny that we've had this relationship for 30 years and somehow I never asked you about the artists that really inspired you.
You know, when I was, people often ask that question when they're in my studio, you know, and then they're like, so who are you looking at? And I look at tons of work. I feel like now the work really comes from the work and the years of working. And sometimes
it's evolving out of itself.
And also given a certain kind of opportunity, you know, I can talk about some of those, but I feel like when I was young, there was clear, you know, when I was in school, like the sculpture of Giacometti was incredibly, you know, important to me in that sense that you want to make sculpture that you feel in your body when you physically look at it, you know, that it's not just an eye thing or a head thing, but it's also a physical body experience. Like you look at that work and you like feel it. Yeah. And I used to look at a ton of dance and I was really interested in that for that reason, like feeling that edge. And when I was in graduate school, Louise Bourgeois had her first major show at MoMA, the show that Deborah Y had curated. And that was an amazing experience to see that work and how emotional it was and powerful. So I think those were really, really big, you know, made a huge impact. But, and I, you know, and knowing artists and having artist friends, but I feel like, you know, in the years since I've been working, it's more coming from the work or coming from, you know, conversations. Like, for example, when you said, can you make that piece 60 feet tall? Like, that changed things. I had to think of, like, well, the piece was
such
about
a minor
one thing.
Ask.
The piece was about one thing, but it was 12 feet, but it was about something else when it was 60 feet. It was about a different experience. And I remember Dori Papadimitriou, who was the curator at the Noyes Museum of Art, calling me. I didn't know her, and she got in touch, and she said, you know, we want to do you to do one of a show about your relationship to water. It was really early, and I'm like, what are you talking about, my relationship to water? And then she started talking about all this work of mine that related to water, and I thought, oh yeah, you're right, you know. And then I hadn't thought about it like that. And then she asked me to make an installation for the museum about their, you know, their relationship to water and the site of that space. And then that opened up a million opportunities, including the piece in Holland, which was about water, and you know, so and the piece I did in Princeton, where so I feel like the work has really changed as much as anything from someone giving me an opening, you know, of some sort, not an opening of an exhibition, but an opening of an idea,
right?
You know,
so it was the noise that started you on the water.
I mean, I think she showed me a bunch of pieces of mine that she'd seen. That and she and it was like, oh yeah, you're right, it's there.
Oh, you know, gosh.
But
yeah,
it was sort of
that.
Like the palette was there, the, you know, people had always for years said, oh, this looks like it came from under the ocean, or this looks, you know. But that was when I started actually thinking about what that means and thinking about site, you know. I'd made site
and
specific
water,
pieces
and specific waterways
and the issues that were relevant to those, and you know, so that kind of opened up that, like, little comment opened up everything, you know.
I must say, going to Holland to see your shows there was so much fun. That was one of the best trips ever.
I couldn't believe that you really meant a lot to me that I was having this exciting thing. And then I remember you saying, do you want me to help you? I'm like, and actually, Junya had already offered. I already had someone, which was still amazing also. But then, you know, that you said, okay, we'll come. You know, and then you came all the way to Holland to see the installation, and
we traveled together.
And
how long was that wave piece?
That was about 60 feet. And that's actually about to be reinstalled. That was in storage all this time, but it's going to be –
it's going to be reinstalled.
Yeah, for the first time. It's going to be in a show in Brooklyn at the a new place to, called Biobat, which is about the intersection – a nonprofit about the intersection of art and science.
Oh, fantastic.
And it's going to be there this summer. So it's been in.
You've done that before. You did that in Princeton, the art and
Science.
Art and science. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so that's, that. You know.
That's great.
That's a, that'll be exciting to get to reconfigure, but remake that piece because that hasn't been shown since it was in Holland.
Yeah, I am so happy that piece will have another existence. Is that all packed?
Yeah,
boxes?
It's not actually because I had done the piece at the Noyes Museum, which was enormous, also 60 feet long. And when the institution in Holland had gotten in touch, it was just exorbitant to ship something that was that complicated. So I had sort of made a new piece that was collapsible, which was a different kind of challenge.
Oh, yeah.
And so that whole installation fit in three big boxes.
Unbelievable.
And so I've been able to store those three big boxes.
Oh, so it'll have another, yeah. Totally
everything.
Didn't know that.
So that was another opportunity where, given the opportunity, instead of that, the piece that preceded it was this complicated armature, which had handmade paper put wet on the armature and then, you know, was a rigid form.
Yeah.
The piece for Holland, I made the paper with wire inside it. I mean, it made the paper to do that so the paper itself could bend on site. So we put it up, and then I didn't even have to go there to take it down.
Wow.
They took it down and sent it back. So that was, you know, another case where the invitation helped lead the work. So that was an exciting thing.
So I just wanted to say one last – I this is something so important, and I don't think I've ever told you this, but as a curator and a dealer over the 40 years, you know, one of the things we do, as you know, is look at art nonstop, morning, noon, and night, year after year. And so the way I choose art, you know, for my home and also for the artists that I work with, you in particular, is you look at any given genre and you see the artists work in that genre and you see all the feeds, you know, all the influences, and you see which artists have sort of appropriated more than others, which have gone off on a more singular path than others. I always felt that you had one of the most singular, unique, it's hard to use that word, you know, in this day and age, because it's fraught with all kinds of philosophical issues, but I'll say it anyway. I feel that your work expresses something that is more your own than coming from any other artist or period in art. And that has been... Have I ever told you that?
I don't think so, but thank you.
But that is really, I feel very strongly that way, that one of the things that intrigues me and draws me to your work constantly is this amazing reinvention that is still part of the core of who you are and what your work is. But still, every time I come to your studio, I'm just blown away.
Thanks, Kristen. I remember a few times when you might have not liked things as much, but actually I appreciate that too. You know, the fact that we can have that
only
conversation.
Once. I think that only happened once.
But anyway, I appreciate that in a way that an artist talk to each other. You know, when an artist comes to your studio, they give you feedback about what they respond to and what they don't, and often dealers are more responding to sort of what might work
sell
for them and their clients or their vision of the gallery.
Yeah.
But I appreciate that we've had a relationship where you're responding actually to the work you see beyond that. So I appreciate that.
Oh, I am so glad to hear that. So Nancy, it occurs to me that one of the wonderful things about this conversation is that we've never actually sat down before and discussed our whole relationship from beginning to end and how it's...
Hopefully not end.
Oh, definitely not end. Never, never. But I mean, you know, till now. I should have said from beginning till now. And just, you know, really thought about how complex it's been and how amazingly inspiring it's been for, you know, for me. And I know my giving you my grandmother's silver candlesticks to make some beautiful pieces was nice for you, because I know that it means a lot to you to have personal items sometimes to add to your pieces. And but the fact that the pieces that came out of those were some of the most beautiful things I think you've ever made. I feel like in some ways those represent our relationship. And so, but this conversation has pulled it all together, and it's just been really fun.
I agree.
This series is supported by the Paulette Krasner Foundation, established in 1985 for the sole purpose of providing financial assistance to individual visual artists. Each artist in this series has benefited from the generosity of the Paulette Krasner Foundation through their grant program. The Artist Perspectives podcast series is just one way that Art Table works to support all women in the arts. To find out more about our initiatives for the advancement of women's leadership, please visit us at arttable.org.